It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Our special guest today, Scott Yeager with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. We'll talk with Yeager in just a moment. Howard Halderman is president and CEO of Halderman Farm Management Services. He was featured recently on a Farm Foundation forum on what to expect if you're looking at solar or wind.
The solar and wind company does reserve the right to terminate. It's kind of unilateral in that regard. The landowner really can't. And if you do a solar lease, because it's taking all of the field, I certainly would want to have some protection if they decide to terminate part of that lease, meaning, well, we're going to just develop the key middle part of that 80 acres and leave you the periphery. That's not really what you want to farm. So I think having some protection on what that partial termination might look like is important.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Scott Yeager. Scott is Chief Environmental Counsel with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. He's headquartered in Washington, D.C. Scott, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
With the change of administrations, we've seen a recalibration when it comes to something known as WOTUS, or Waters of the U.S. Just about the time we think we know the direction we're going, it's changed again. What's happening on WOTUS today?
Yep. Thanks for the question. And, you know, this is one that changes with every administration. And we know that it's become basically a political lightning rod and gets kicked back and forth between Democratic and Republican administrations. And when the Biden-Harris administration took over the federal government, they're now having their own chance to talk about WOTUS. So what has just come to a close, really the close of an open comment period, just took place about a week ago. And the comment period was for the public to engage on a proposal that was put forward on WOTUS. And basically what it would do is put WOTUS back to the 1986 definition of WOTUS. And it's kind of a short-term effort. And then it buys them time. And by them, I mean the Biden-Harris administration. It buys the Biden-Harris administration time to craft their own definition of WOTUS through a second rule. So we just finished part one is where we're at in that two-part process. They just closed the comment period. And NCBA used that opportunity to bring forward some really strong comments. We found through analyzing this proposal that it basically has some pretty troubling issues in it for cattle producers, not the least of which is that it erases all of the really important agricultural exclusions that we've had in place for a number of years that were contained in definitions of WOTUS that were written by both the Trump administration and even the Obama administration. Both of those definitions of WOTUS had clear agricultural exclusions for things like stock ponds and farm ponds, drainage features, and things, other types of features that you would find at a farm or ranch. So those are gone under the Biden proposal. So that's something that we very strongly oppose and are suggesting that the government fix throughout this process. So that's where we're at in WOTUS. They'll probably finalize a rule in the next weeks to months, and then we'll see what's in that final rule. And that final rule is going to be what becomes the law of the land until they craft a step two rule. So we're deep in what they call the administrative rulemaking process, which is what the government has to, those are the rules of the road for the federal government in issuing these rules. So we play a role in that all along the way to make sure that our grassroots cattle producers are heard in that process.
And there's a couple of directions we could go here, but one of them is the fact that maybe had Congress written specifically what Waters of the U.S. were, we wouldn't be here today. And I guess the second part of that is it true that really no matter what they put out, this will be decided by the courts again?
So let me answer the Congress question first. I think you're absolutely right. that this is an issue that Congress needs to answer. Unfortunately, the way that our Congress works or hasn't worked over recent history, this issue is so politically wrought that there is no desire by at least the current Congress to answer that question. You know, it's the Democrats, perhaps if they had a 60 vote majority, might come out with their own piece of or their own definition of WOTUS in legislation. That would be perhaps a broader definition than Republicans would come out with. But given the fact that their 50-50 split with Vice President Harris as the tiebreaker is actually gone at this very moment, because Ben Ray Lujan, Democratic senator, had a stroke recently and he can't vote right now. So he's sidelined, which gives Republicans the nominal majority of a 50-49 split. So that's where we're at. And because of that very close split, even if it is a Republican majority nominally right now, you still need a 60 vote filibuster proof majority to get anything done, especially on something like WOTUS that's so politically sensitive. So Congress is not going to answer the question in the short term. And then who does that leave it with to figure it out? Well, you can see the Biden administration is trying to answer that question through their federal rulemaking authority. And then now, to answer your second question, we're seeing that the Supreme Court is taking a keen interest in this case, and they've granted cert in a case called Sackett versus EPA. And the Sacketts are no strangers to the Supreme Court. They have been before the Supreme Court back in 2012, and they won a definitive victory on an ancillary Clean Water Act question. So now they're back again, and there's a very different court than there was back the last time the Supreme Court looked at the issue of WOTUS, which was in 2006 in the Rapanos case. Now we've got a stronger conservative majority that is going to look, I think, very critically at this issue and provide us, I hope, some clear guidance. Now, it doesn't mean the fact that there's a 6-3 conservative majority does not mean it's automatically going to give us a slam dunk and provide clear guidance and limit the scope of the Clean Water Act. That's not the case. These issues typically are very complicated. And while the ideology of the justices on the bench play into it, it's not going to be what ultimately how they decide it. So it's one we're going to be watching very carefully. And in fact, we just got approval, preliminary approvals to actually file a brief in a Supreme Court case. So we'll be looking at that to make sure that we get the voice of the cattle industry heard in that case as well.
Let's now pivot to another issue, and unlike WOTUS, this doesn't really affect the entire U.S. and all cattle producers or livestock producers or landowners, but it is an issue that does affect quite a few, and we're talking about gray wolf now. I know you're the lead on gray wolf litigation. What's happening on that front?
Well, we got a really bad decision out of a judge in the Northern District of California, and that decision was to vacate the Trump administration's delisting of the gray wolf in the lower 48. And for those of you and you're part of the woods there, Tony, gray wolf is probably not an issue of concern whatsoever, but this issue of the Endangered Species Act generally is one that folks, especially in the panhandle with species like lesser prairie chicken, are well aware of how burdensome it could be to be a landowner who is who has a threatened or endangered species and critical habitat on their property, and what that means for them. So the gray wolf decision in this case effectively kills the Trump administration's delisting of the gray wolf in the lower 48. And what's more concerning than that, and especially for folks all part around the country where there may not be gray wolves, is the rationale that the judge came up with to justify killing that delisting. And basically the rationale was that when the government's looking at a species for recovery, whether that be the gray wolf, as in this case, or you could apply it to something like the lesser prairie chicken or others out there to understand kind of why this decision's so bad, he said you have to look at the pre-European pre-Europeans coming to the United States, or rather, I guess the New World, levels of those species. So that's the threshold, that's the benchmark that this judge was looking at to determine whether or not the government had properly delisted. It was, did you look at how many wolves there were here in this continent before Europeans ever came here? And I'm hoping you can sense the absurdity in that line of logic, because that means that really, if that's the benchmark that they're testing all these species by for recovery, there's not going to be a single species in this country that's ever going to meet that benchmark, because, you know, we've been in this country now for, Europeans have been in this country now for hundreds of years. We have undeniably, set out across the land and set up civilization, and species are different now. Where they're located is different, and they've been pulled back from pre-European levels. So the concern here is that this bad decision not only impacts great wolves, but really sets out a very bad legal precedent that could be harming us in the future on all these other species as well. So it's a concern for us. Now, NCBA and Public Lands Council have been involved in that process. We were actually denied intervention, so the court would not let us into that case. So we appealed that denial, and we filed an amicus brief. But it just stands for a situation where you have a judge out here who might be kind of have some activist alignment and really have a preconceived idea of how to decide that case before ever even reading the briefs and issuing a decision that could really be harmful to landowners across the country for years to come. So we're very opposed to the decision. We're analyzing our options for how we could potentially overturn that decision. And we're also exploring how we could work within the regulatory process to make sure that we don't end more regulatory decisions hamper and really handcuff our landowners from using their land the way they intend to use it.
Not exactly the way you'd want to do it, but it is job security, because it definitely will keep you busy. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us. Will you come back and update us down the road?
You got it. I'm happy to do that.
He's the Chief Environmental Counsel, National Cattlemen's Beef Association. It's Scott Yeager on today's Agribusiness Report.
For 40 years, United Ag has been committed to ensuring the vitality of the ag industry. United Ag helps protect your future and the future of your workforce. Join United Ag and take advantage of up-to-date information on pending legislation and immigration reform, advocacy, health benefits, and leadership opportunities. United Ag is here to ensure your farm makes it to the next generation. Join us at www.unitedag.org. That's unitedag.org.
There is only one original. There is only one Sunflower. The originator of flexible tillage tools, Sunflower has always been a true pioneer of flexible plows, chisel plows, offset discs, and so many other tools designed to increase efficiency and productivity. If the question is how to drastically improve your seeding and tillage, with a tool for every soil type and a cropping program, the answer is Sunflower. Learn more at LivingstonMachinery.com to find a location near you. Livingston Machinery, 24/7 service for your 24/7 operation.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today, Scott Yeager with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
For 40 years, United Ag has been committed to ensuring the vitality of the ag industry. United Ag helps protect your future and the future of your workforce. Join United Ag and take advantage of up-to-date information on pending legislation and immigration reform, advocacy, health benefits, and leadership opportunities. United Ag is here to ensure your farm makes it to the next generation. Join us at www.unitedag.org. That's unitedag.org.
Second best isn't good enough when it comes to your tractor's performance. You know it? We know it. That's why we run Fendt tractors. One test drive can show you the difference between a great tractor and a truly exceptional machine. Ready to set up a demo? Get behind the wheel of a Fendt to experience it for yourself and see why the best run operations run Fendt. Learn more at LivingstonMachinery.com and to find a location near you. Livingston Machinery, 24/7 service for your 24/7 operation.
Welcome back. It's the Agribusiness Report. Find out more about the National Cattlemen's Beef Association online, beef.org.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
When it comes to farming cotton in West Texas, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers rely on Delta Pine brand cotton. Bred, tested, and made in West Texas for West Texas growing conditions. Strong is a legacy all its own. Protect yours with strong cotton from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
That's my ex-girlfriend. That's my ex-ex-girlfriend. That's my ex-ex-ex-girlfriend.
Dating can feel uncomfortable. Your clothes shouldn't. Cotton, the fabric of our lives.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack on the Ag Innovation Mission.
The Aim for Climate Initiative. This was an initiative that the United States and the UAE launched at COP26. When we launched it, there were roughly 80 partners who were interested. We had 8 sprint initiatives. These are research initiatives looking at ways in which technologies and advancements in climate smart agriculture can be instituted into the market more quickly. During the course of the ministerial, we sort of focused for 2022 in 4 areas. Our sprint partners, asking them to focus on assisting smallholder farmers in middle-income and low-income countries, looking at methane reduction strategies, the embracing of emerging technologies like nanotechnology, biotechnology, robotics, and AI, as well as advancing ecological research, which is research in the area of regenerative agriculture, soil health, areas that were pretty significant in terms of our ability to embrace climate-smart agriculture and to reduce the greenhouse gas footprint of agriculture globally.